You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. In this already historic election, we've had a number of historic narratives. Certainly there was the Clinton narrative. Could Hillary be president? Should she be president? Would she be president? There, of course, is the Barack Obama narrative, first African-American president. But, it's not about sex and it's not about race. The narrative of Sarah Palin is center stage regardless of the fortunes of the candidate, John McCain. Sarah Palin has been an obsession of the media and of American voters since she was nominated as the running mate for John McCain. Last weekend, she was on Saturday Night Live, which gave her a big bounce. By Wednesday, there was talk all over the internet and on the news programs of Palin's high-end shopping spree, apparently $150,000 spent by the McCain campaign on her clothing. There's the wild ride with a stop to Alaska to give her Troopergate deposition in a case that's going on in Alaska. There's no end of Palin news, but how is the media handling this, and what is the Palin narrative, really, if we're going to take a serious look at it? Joining us now is Emily Rooney, host of the television show Greater Boston and the Media Roundtable program Beat the Press on our partner WGBH and PBS. Emily, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, John, an old colleague of yours from ABC.
That's right, a former executive producer of World News Tonight. That's right. Emily, the Palin narrative is about more than sex. It's about more than class. It's about more than youth. What do you think the Palin narrative is, if you were to sort of give it a succinct kind of caption?
I'll give it one word. It's about uncertainty. This is a woman that no one knew a single thing about. And with uncertainty comes all these things, you know, including rumors and background checks. Every other candidate, including the 8 or 9 or however many candidates were in the Democratic, in the Republican, I guess there was about 18 if you counted everybody, who were in the primaries, had a known quantity to them. Even a guy like Ron Paul had a known quantity. She came in completely naked in terms of that. So instantly you had and some responsible and some irresponsible media reporting things about her that were not true. And there's a lot of reeling back and apologies and mistakes made in the beginning, you know, even the stuff about the baby being her grandchild, that kind of stuff. But now once that first sort of rollout went away, the serious stuff of her background really, really took place. And everybody else had been vetted. Everybody else had had these profiles done up about them ad nauseum, not so her. And when you get into a race that early, that was one of the dangers of A, picking an unknown, and B, picking somebody so late in the race. It used to be that the VPs were, you know, first of all, the conventions were a lot earlier, and the VPs were known by then. So the summer was over, and, you know, the gun goes off after Labor Day, and suddenly she was front and center Labor Day, and that's when the media started taking off on her.
It was
her.
All about guns and moose, and from the lilt of her voice to the kinds of things she said, Palin has been an obsession. Let's remind ourselves of the Palin-esque qualities of Sarah Palin.
I like being able to answer these tough questions without the filter even of the mainstream media, kind of telling viewers what they've just heard.
You know, Emily, as sort of cautious as I am about the notions of Sarah Palin's qualifications and maybe her positions on the issues, there is, even to this moment, a quality of her like, man, she's in the ride of her life, look at her go, and that fuels this on some level.
It did, and that's part of the charm of it. And I think the mainstream media has actually given her a ride on that. They've made her. She's been on Saturday Night Live. How much more mainstream media could you get? That quality of hers that is very kind of Obama-esque in a way. She's got the same kind of crowds, the same kind of appeal, same kind of enthusiastic supporters. One of the reasons people know about it is because they see the way she comes through the television when you get right down to it, or the radio because of the voice. That's why people they connect with her in a way.
But has this campaign obscured her message? Newt Gingrich has said the way the mainstream media has dealt with her is unfair. Palin herself expressed frustration in talking to James Dobson that basically it makes a caricature of her and doesn't allow her to state her positions on the issues.
But part of that was their doing. You know, they rolled her out in bits and pieces. they, instead of just getting it over with all at once, have a mainstream press conference, they decided to manage the rollout, and frankly, it backfired. They started with Katie Couric.
They started with Charlie Gibson,
and then with Katie Couric, and then they went to Brian Williams, and he did it piecemeal, instead of just doing it all at once. And I think they were surprised by, they thought, you know, giving these lengthy interviews, they really didn't realize the way these things were going to be chopped up. And things are always cut up in a way that works best for the format of the broadcast. And in a half-an-hour nightly news broadcast, they're going to put things out one at a time that break news. And that's what happened to her. And I think she felt kind of burned, especially by Katie Couric.
But, Emily, I find some of this, all of this talk about the media and the coverage of Palin a bit absurd on some level, only in that here you have a vice presidential candidate. Voters are the ones who are going to decide whether or not they should give her that job. Therefore, voters should know something about, A, what she's done in the past as mayor of Wasilla, as governor of Alaska, and so on. Now, clearly, not every media outlet has done a good job. Most have tried, but as you say, there's been such a limited access to her. How much do we really even know of her if we took all of her public statements during the past 6 weeks and just lined them up? It wouldn't be much other than the speeches that she makes on the trail.
You know, but when you think about it, all of the responsible, anyway, media in this country have been to Wasilla. Everybody's gone there and looked at her track record as governor, looked at her track record as a mayor there. So if you really want to know some of the minutiae about anything, her position on energy policy, it's all there. But she is a huge persona.
And
that's the thing that people are focusing on. And she's not kind of letting that go away either. That's sort of the reason why she's risen to this level. It's all about her persona. So her record has been marginalized even by the McCain people.
She's driving it. The campaign is driving it. The question on Election Day is how much that profile is going to affect the actual vote for the Republicans. John McCain, my takeaway from what you said is that the vetting at the end of the campaign sets her apart from every other candidate because it's been such a long campaign. Emily Rooney, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Dory.
Emily Rooney, host of the television show Greater Boston and Beat the Press from our partner WGBH in Boston. And now, headlines from Femi Okay.
Thanks, John. The time is 29 minutes past the hour.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.